This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at Kizik.com/socks.
This is iFanboy Booksplode Sleeper Book 1. Fanboy Booksplode Sleeper Book 1. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everyone.
Booksplode is the series that was unlocked by the patrons in which Josh and I take a look at a trade paperback, a collected edition, something we don't talk about in the normal show. All this year, we've been doing nostalgia trips. We spent some time in the 80s, spent some time in the 90s, and now we're in the 2000s. So we're going to take a look at Sleeper Book 1, which is a fairly recent release from DC/Wildstorm. Which collects two series. It collects the miniseries that led into Sleeper, which was called Point Blank, and then it includes the first 12 issues of Sleeper, the first season of Sleeper, written by Ed Brubaker, drawn by Sean Phillips, and Point Blank was written by Ed Brubaker and drawn by Colin Wilson.
A name I did not recognize.
Just to some context, Sleeper came out in 2003, and Point Blank came out in 2002. So 2002, the Point Blank miniseries, which followed Grifter, the character from Wildcats, as he deals with some stuff, and that led into the Sleeper series. And Sleeper is a book that we have all talked about, especially Josh, as one of their favorite all-time series. One of the books that was very important to the early days of iFanboy. It came out in the first couple years of iFanboy existing, and it was one of those books from that classic time, that early 2000s, that was like the last sort of golden age of comics, in our opinion. And so that's where we are, right, Josh? Is it all correct? All accurate?
Yeah. And I, what's interesting is that I think this is true. I don't know if I was reading Sleeper in issues. If I wasn't, I was right behind it. I'm pretty sure I was. But I don't think I'd ever read Point Blank. And I think it was one of those things like, I really need to read that sometimes. And then I thought, eh. And I just never got to it. So when I read it this time, it was weird because it was like, it was familiar because I knew who the characters they were talking about were.
Right.
But I hadn't read it. So that part was kind of new. Although I don't think it's necessary.
I didn't read until trades for sure. Mm-hmm. I just remember that because I remember at the time not sort of avoiding Wildstorm. You know, that was not ABC because that was Alan Moore's own line. It was separate, even though Wildstorm published it. You know, I didn't read Wildcats 3.0 when it came out. I read that in trades. I read Sleeper in trades. It was like I had to wait to make sure it was good because I'd been burned by all those books. So mm-hmm. I definitely didn't read Sleeper till later. I don't think I ever read Point Blank, although, like you said, it felt vaguely familiar, so it's hard to say exactly. It's been a long time. It's been 15 years.
What's funny is I wasn't burned by Wildstorm, so I'd only read really good Wildstorm stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the reason that I got to it was because I had been reading Joe Casey's Wildcats, and this was in that same vein. So somebody said, try this, you'll like this.
Right.
And I didn't really have a context for it. In fact, I didn't even know that it was Wildstorm Universe stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was only later that I was like, oh, I see this is all connected to that.
It's very separate, especially Sleeper. Point Blank is obviously includes Grifter, which is it's deep in the Wildstorm Universe. Sleeper, you could just hand it to somebody and be like, this is a really cool story that involves superpowered beings, and it's not connected to anything, really.
But Tao and Lynch are both from...
Sure, but you don't... I mean, they're not, like, super famous characters, you know? You wouldn't really know that.
If you were like, I never really liked any of that stuff, I don't want to be involved, then forget it was involved. It has nothing to do with the book that we're going to talk about if you don't want it to be.
Right.
I think that's the point I think we're both trying to get to.
Yeah. And Sleeper, very critically acclaimed. This is during Ed Brubaker's time in DC. He was doing Batman. He was doing this book. This was definitely in his wheelhouse.
And it's interesting because at that time, or even like a handful of years later, when you wanted to do something like it was more edgy and independent, you know, like you'd go to the Wildstorm books.
Right.
Or maybe Vertigo instead of going to Image or going to wherever. And so like this was to me, I was like, oh, this is his indie stuff at the time. That's kind of what I thought. Not entirely true, but it was definitely a different corner, you know, because Garth Ennis would do a bunch of stuff over there and the good guys would do mainstream stuff, but in that context there, which I thought was kind of cool.
It was a time in which both Marvel and DC had a very indie bent to them.
Yeah.
There was still remnants of Marvel Knights. Even though this was a DC book, it was still, I mean, there's nudity, there's cursing.
Yeah. Before they bought Wildstorm, they were an indie book.
Yeah.
I guess, you know.
Felt very much like an indie comic, like an Ed Brubaker indie crime comic. This would feel very much at home with Incognito and with Criminal and with, you know, everything he's been doing at Image. It feels very much in that vein. And this is also the beginning of the Brubaker-Phillips partnership that brings us books like Criminal and things like that. Let's start with Point Blank, which is, I believe, five-issue miniseries that features Grifter dealing with some memory problems as he meets up with John Lynch, character from Wildcats, and is going to get back in the game investigating a character named Tao, who I didn't know at all because he came out from books I wasn't reading. He was a hero turned villain.
Yeah. He was in the, if you read the Alan Moore Wildcat stuff, he's in there.
And so then Grifter, who is a street level like assassin character, who is a prototypical Josh character, blonde, badass, funny guy.
I always think of him as their Wolverine.
Right. He spends his time in this miniseries, in the fringes of the Wildstorm universe, in the dank bars, the hero bars, and the places you're not going to run into, you know, your big heroes. They're very much crime noir, film noir stories in which Grifter's basically a private eye character who goes to meet a case and gets pulled into it in a way he didn't expect. People get shot and people die and there's murders and there's lost time and lost memories. And I enjoyed reading it. Even though I felt weird reading it, if that makes any sense.
In what way?
Well, the story of Sleeper itself is about a different character who is undercover in Tao's organization being run by John Lynch. John Lynch gets shot in the Point Blank miniseries. And so now in Sleeper, this character, whose name I never remember.
Holden Carver?
Carver is off on his own. He's a double agent adrift. In Point Blank, I almost felt like, since I never originally had this information, I didn't need it.
That's true.
Again, I liked reading it, but like I never read this originally, so I enjoyed Sleeper just fine without it, but I did like it.
And I think that's fair. Like, it wasn't necessary. And if it come out afterwards, and you're like, well, this wasn't necessary, but as a thing that led into a thing, and also, you know, keeping in mind that, you know, that's how comics work then.
Yep.
And still now, to a certain extent. They were very different.
Yes.
Types of books. Like, the plotting and sort of... The plotting of Point Blank was great. Like it was,
yes.
It was confusing, but not because it was poorly done.
Intentionally confusing.
Yeah, and there was a bunch of times where I went back and I was like, oh, he's really okay. So here's my theme that I think became clear through the whole thing. There are certain creators who are very, very good, and as they get on in their career, they learn to be more efficient and they learn to take. Shortcuts isn't exactly it, but they're basically doing less with more. But there's a little bit in the beginning where they're really trying to impress people and you know, and trying to figure out who they are and do everything where they're just putting a lot into what they do. And I think that this is a really good period of that for Ed Brubaker. His newer stuff that, you know, I think he's obviously got a lot of talent and craft and everything, and you're seeing it every time a Criminal issue comes up. But here, I really feel like he was like trying to do something. Like he hadn't proven himself to everybody yet. So he had to be like, look what I can do.
Right.
I could apply this to Darwin. He got much more economical with his work as time went on to stay on a schedule, you know, but also to get it done. But if you look at the work that was done like in New Frontier, it's much more labor intensive, for lack of a better word, than sort of some of the stuff that you see later.
I also think that the story he's telling here with Point Blank, especially, is a very intricate story. So it's,
yes,
it would be harder to do it more spare because there's a lot of clues and things you have to have in the story. And it's about Grifter's memory not being reliable. So things are folding in and he's remembering things differently. And he keeps repeating days. So after a while, I was like, am I going crazy? No, it's Grifter who's going crazy.
Yeah.
So that's how it really worked. And then you get to Sleeper, and I think that's sort of Brubaker unleashed, because that's really where it really felt like Brubaker. Point Blank feels more like a...
like he was trying to fit his thing into something else.
Yeah. Yes.
And it works. But the point being, like, I don't know that I have ever enjoyed Brubaker stuff as much as I enjoyed these issues initially.
Sleeper.
That's my point. Yeah. Sleeper.
Let's close the loop on Point Blank, because really we are here to talk about Sleeper. And Point Blank is a nice intro into the characters in the world, and it's in the collection, obviously, but really I want to talk about the Sleeper story. But Point Blank was fun. I like Grifter as a character. The Colin Wilson art is good.
Works.
It's solid. I never really had any big problems with it. It's not Sean Phillips, but I liked it, and I liked the story.
Well, for art of the time, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, like in the context of everything that was happening back then, it's sort of transitional, like getting away from what would have been mainstreamy kind of stuff into more, I don't know, Britishy. And that's what it reminds me of. It's like 2000 AD kind of style.
And what's good about the story is that it doesn't lead directly into Sleeper. It's more like,
yeah,
it touches Sleeper and then bounces off and comes back to what it's doing. So it's like, it's there. The crossover is there. Lynch getting shot is obviously a big deal for Sleeper, but still it's a different story being told than what you're getting in Sleeper.
It does give you more context on Lynch, which I think is not unhelpful.
Yeah, that's true. Because I didn't know him at all, really.
Yeah, so you don't really have to spend quite so much time trying to figure out who he is in the story. He's already unknown, and I don't think that hurts it.
I did like the sequence where he goes to visit Midnighter, and then he visits Jack Hawksmoor.
Yeah.
Those are fun characters. I like that bit.
And at that time, they were immensely important and popular, so when they showed up, it was exciting.
Yeah, so really, you've got Grifter playing the role of Philip Marlowe, basically, or Sam Spade, and trying to figure out why this case he's been brought into is spiraled out of control, and why he's implicated in it, and why people are trying to kill him, and it, you know, it never really resolves itself because the larger context continues in a Sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very classic early 2000s story in which the hero does not save the day at the end.
Yeah.
He's caught in the grip of a villain that's much smarter than he is.
Yeah. So I guess closing the loop on it would be like, it's good. Mm-hmm. It's worth reading. But if you really didn't want to, you don't have to.
Yeah, you can skip right to Sleeper number one. So let's talk about that. So you, for years, Josh, when people talk to you about your favorite comics, you would always mention Sleeper.
Yeah.
But you probably hadn't read it in a while, I'm assuming.
I hadn't. I have read it at least once. Like, so when it came out?
2003, originally.
So 16 years ago, say 16, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read it once in the middle there somewhere when they released trades. And I think I'm pretty sure I read mine again. So that would have been somewhere between 7 and 10 years ago.
So I'm assuming in the last, we'll say 5 or so years, you haven't read it.
I think no.
Fair assumption. So what overall, did you still like it? Do you still love it? Would you still tell people it's one of your favorite comics? Would you still recommend it?
I mean, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it's one of my favorite comics. It's a book that I like a lot and it stuck with me. And I did, I mean, I'm not giving anything. I really liked it this time. Mm-hmm. The thing that I liked about it, and it's sort of this is a lot of the favorite comics of it. I just found it super compelling. I really want to know what's going to happen next. And even though I read it, I was very invested in, like, I had to rush to finish this, but like, right. I was never like, ugh, I have to fight. I was always like, I wish I had more time to keep reading this now.
Right.
It's a heck of a page turner. And, you know, my favorite book of all time is Preacher. Same thing. Like, I couldn't put the damn thing down. And this had that feeling at the time. And it was definitely sort of coming back to it. You know, we've been talking about Brubaker for years and years and years now. You know, his male leads have a lot in common.
Mm-hmm.
They're men who want to do the right thing with the wrong side of stuff, and they're driven by an inner morality, but they're not sure if they should be or what. Like, that's almost all of them.
Right.
But this was the first time I'd read it. I really did dig it. I keep it in my mind that I don't remember what happened, but I remember that I didn't like season 2 as much. It didn't have that same drive.
Well, we'll definitely talk about that at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Knowing that this was all there was, though, at the time, it's a 12-issue series, it was great. I really enjoyed it. I saw everything I liked about it, and there was nothing like, ooh, I didn't think this was good. I didn't think it hold up at all.
Well, season two or no season two, Sleeper in and of itself is a very self-contained story. I mean, these 12 issues obviously don't resolve the problem, but you can only ever read these 12 issues and you would have had a satisfying story to read.
Absolutely.
As we said, this is about Holden Carver, who was a hero known as the Conductor, although he's never called that, who has, through some alien artifact, has had his nervous system replaced, so he feels no pain. He regenerates all injuries, and he can take physical, I guess, pain, but he doesn't feel it. But takes the pain, and he can send it back out as force. So if you shoot him with a gun, he can then touch someone and hurt them. So he has been sent by Lynch to be undercover in the organization run by this guy named Tao, who is the only criticism I'd ever have of this book is I've never really understood Tao that well. He's sort of a mysterious figure who we see a lot, but I'm not even clear on what his powers are. But it doesn't really,
I actually think it
doesn't really matter.
I mean, I think if you'd read, yeah, you'll read the Alan Moore's Wildcats, there's more in there. I think I might be wrong. I haven't read that in a while, but I think that's how it works. But also, like, I never actually considered that a fault. That was kind of a, like, he's mysterious, he's weird, like everyone's scared of him.
Yeah, he's in the book a lot. It's not like he's not in there, but it doesn't really matter because you just know you're supposed to be scared of him. And so then Carver is now in trouble because Lynch, the guy running his undercover op, was shot in the Point Blank series. He's in a coma. No one knows who he is. No one knows that he's really undercover. It's basically like The Departed. No one knows he's actually a good guy. How does he keep running this line of, I've got to stay undercover, so I've got to keep doing these bad things, but really no one knows I'm actually trying to bring this organization down. So that's the tension of the book, and it's a very palpable tension. You really do feel for Carver, and you really feel tense reading it because you know, like, no, there's no way out here for him because the only guy who knows he's a good guy is in a coma. It's just basically him going along. There's obviously an overarching story, but really there's a lot of different missions that they go on here as you meet the people around him and as he gets deeper and deeper into Tao's organization, as he gets to the top as far as he can get infiltrating the organization. And you meet lots of great characters. He gets to the top ranking, called a prodigal, with Miss Misery and the other guy whose name I don't remember.
Peter Grimm. And the guy before him who dies.
My favorite character in the book is his buddy, Genocide.
Genocide. Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I just really like him, even though he's a bad guy. And then when I realized I really liked him a lot, that's when he got killed. So it's just a great, much like The Departed, but with superheroes, it's a great story of undercover tension and anxiety. It's great. I really like reading this a lot. I love reading this.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was really great as you went through it is that the whole time the Holden's thing is like, wait, so am I a bad guy or am I a good guy or does it matter?
I kind of like doing some of this stuff, you know.
But also the guys that he works for. Like, he thought he was doing the good guy, the G.I. Joe thing, and maybe not. And then there's the whole idea, like, does Tao know? Am I just wasting my time? And then, right. then later it seems like he does, but maybe he's fucking with him. And
that's the maddening part of these kind of stories, is you never really know. The main character doesn't know, which means you don't really know what's real or what's not real. Is he really fooling Tao, or is Tao known this whole time and he's just fucking with them? Doesn't really matter. It's psychologically harrowing.
Yeah.
As he's going on these adventures. And, you know, good guys aren't 100% good. The bad guys aren't 100% bad, although some of them are. It's kind of fun to be a bad guy. You know, it's kind of fun to have Miss Misery constantly want to bang you. Like,
yeah.
There's a real tough area he's living in. It's not like he's Steve Rogers undercover. You know, it's not like he's this upstanding character. He is a guy who lives in the gray anyway. So maybe he starts getting drawn to it. Yeah.
But at the same time, then, it's like, well, is Tao really bad? You know, like, what's he doing? And then you find out, like, his whole thing is he just wants to bring it all down because it's corrupt and rebuild it or whatever. But maybe that's what's great about Tao, is that, like, everything he says, you don't know you can trust. Like, he's so smart and he's so, you know, with it that you're just always wondering, like,
what. And one of the big adversaries is one of the great concepts of the book, which I loved, was the secret government of the world. You know, like, all these... lineage kings and queens, the real rulers of the world.
What's that called? Like, they fake it in here, but it's like the gathering where they all get together.
Oh, there's all kinds of them. The Bilderbergs and the...
Yeah.
you know, it's like basically like an Illuminati type of situation where there's a, yeah. the real king of America and the king of the African nations and the king of Asia. And, you know, so there are these like feckless, corrupt, you know, things happening. And so he's trying to bring them down. So is that necessarily a bad thing? Not necessarily, but what's he going to do when he brings it down is the bad thing. It's just, this is a book that lives in gray tones, and that's a lot of fun. Let's talk about Sean Phillips, who is obviously Brubaker's collaborator. He's been working with him ever since this book. They do Criminal currently. Phillips is a very idiosyncratic artist. He's not going to get anatomy 100% correctly. He's not going to get faces 100% correctly, but he has a distinct style that's unlike everybody else. You know, Colin Wilson is a solid artist, but Sean Phillips is like a level above that. Even if he doesn't always get everything right, it doesn't really matter. But I feel like you see the growth of Sean Phillips throughout these 12 issues.
100%.
He starts off, it's a little rocky, but by the end, I think he's really found his footing.
I think it's really interesting that as you go through this, like, he's got a... I don't ever think of it like this, but if you pull out, like, if you're on a digital reader and you pull it into the pages view, like, he does panel layouts and like nobody. And this is just his style.
Right.
And most people do not have a grid style.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dave Gibbons has a 9-panel grid style that he, you know, didn't make up, but popularized it to a certain extent. You know, Brian Hitch and John Cassaday with their, you know, 3 to 4 vertical panels and then big splashes. And like, this always looks like a bunch of Polaroids thrown on a table.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
And it's consistent through the whole thing. And I didn't notice it until I pulled out to page view and I saw them all next to each other. And it creates this havoc of moving through the page in a way that's very different than a lot of comic books. And I know if you listen to our regular show, you'll always hear me complaining about bad storytelling or panel stacking in somewhere. And he breaks all of the rules here, and it works completely well. I always used to say, when we talk about Sean Phillips, like, oh, he's an amazing storyteller. And this just backed that up, because I was like, he can pull you through his page however he wants.
You might be a genius for describing it as Polaroid sewn on a table.
Yeah.
Saying that, now looking at it on the page view, it is very much like that. It is crazy.
It's like you're reading a dossier.
You're right. It's like you're looking at the files. You know, there are things that don't necessarily work. You know, there's a panel here where he's playing darts at the bar, and clearly he's like 12 inches from the dartboard. But it's okay because...
These guys cheat. They're bad guys.
Right. Again, the level of artistry is so high, it doesn't matter that he's not necessarily doing everything 100% correctly, because it is art. It's not it's not photographs.
And the tone and this acting and like all is exactly what it needs to be. Again, if you pull out to that view, you see all the blacks and where they are and how much is in, you know, noir shadow. And then the other thing that was happening is to remember in context, too, this was Wildcats. And so even in the context of the time, that would have meant the authority. And there were these huge sort of like take superheroes and crank it up and make it modern or whatever. And they just pulled it right back down, you know, to this sort of, I don't want to say gritty street level, but that will tell you exactly what I mean.
You're in the muck here. You're in villain bars, and there's nudity and cursing and sex and violence and good guys acting bad and people you like getting murdered, and it's all very shadowy and dark, and everyone is gray. You could take out the superhero elements, and this would have been a 1940s film starring Humphrey Bogart. That's why they work so well together with books like The Fade Out, which is, you know, a film noir story set in Hollywood in the 40s, and then so well Criminal, which is basically an ongoing generational noir story, and everything they've done together fits this mold, because that's clearly what Brubaker likes to write. And you can see, I mean, this story sings in a way that his other work maybe not. I mean, he did great work for Batman and other Gotham Central and things like that, but this really sings like a Brubaker book. If this came out right now, I wouldn't blink an eye. You know what I mean?
No, you're right. Yeah,
it's today. This book called Sleeper from Image Comics. It's about superheroes and spies and things. This I wouldn't even notice that this was 15 years old. It feels very modern.
I'd be like, wow, he's getting really good. That's what I would think. Also, I don't know that we made this clear. We talked about all those other work. Like, it's really fun.
Yeah.
It's a really fun book. There's little hints of silly here and there. Every time another villain, like a red shirt, basically, in Tao's organization shows up, it's great. There's a real Garth Ennis quality to those guys. The X-ray guy and, you know, that one who's just like, I'm a real big fan of both of your work, you know, like. And
That guy. Yeah. The kind of rat face guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of imagination here. It's plotted well. It's funny because I did, you know, I read this before. I had the trades. I've read this before. I've probably read it a couple times. But it's been a long time, so a lot of it was new to my memory, but I did remember the sort of the broad strokes of it. I've got zero memory of season two, what season two is like. I don't remember it at all.
Yeah, me too.
Which is good, because apparently the collection of season two was canceled. So they're not going to put it out in this format, which is a bummer. Because Sleeper, I guess, will forever live in an underappreciated section of comics, in which a great book that apparently not many people want to read. Because it was not popular when it came out originally.
Or everybody who read it.
Yeah. It was not popular originally. It's not popular now. It's consistent.
Say that you really like this and you decide to go out and get it, and everybody listening does, then maybe they will make season two. I mean, like, if everybody listening to this bought it, they'd make another book.
That's true.
I know.
For sure. I mean, I think this is a book. First of all, don't be scared off by the Wildstorm tie-in. If you haven't read those Wildstorm books, if you weren't reading comics, then you can 100% pick up this collection and read it and have no trouble whatsoever. All the information that you need to enjoy the story is on the page. So if you at all reading Brubaker's modern crime stuff and you haven't read Sleeper, you got to go back, because this is not his first work. He did Scene to Crime way back before he even did Batman. His Batman stuff was very much like this. This is very much, in terms of modern mainstream work, the early days of his current stuff. This is where you can see everything he's been doing.
Who drew Scene of the Crime?
That was Michael Lark, I think.
Yes.
That was fucked up, that one.
Definitely.
This is part of that great era of comics where we were discovering all this new fun stuff that was outside the mainstream, at least, or even just at the side of the mainstream. And this is, you know, a very exciting time in comics where they were willing to take a lot more chances with what they were publishing, at least the main companies were. But I really would encourage anyone who hasn't read this book to go pick up this collection or any collection of Sleeper season one.
Yeah, if you've been a fan of, like, Criminal and you're like, oh, I get all the Criminal and you haven't read this, then you're...
So would you still put it in that era for you? Like that, like this is like a top book?
I don't know what my rankings would be.
I'd like you right now to tell me your top 20 all-time comic books. Go.
No, I'm not going to do that. like you were going to fool me. I'm like, okay, hang on. Let me get some paper. Of the time, it was one of the best things that came out then. It still holds up in that way. I've read so much during that time. But like, I own this, you know, printed form. I don't buy a lot. And it's still where I'm like, oh, good. I'm glad I still have this so I can, because I read it digitally here. But when you just said season two wasn't coming, I'm like, okay, well, I'll get upstairs. That's good. Like, it's just, it's fun. It's really great. And it does sort of solidify. Oh, right. Yeah, you get used to Ed Brubaker a little bit. He's been around a long time. He's done a lot of stuff. Some of it sort of melds with the other stuff. You got right. He was really, this is why we fell in love, you know, that kind of thing.
He has his corner of comics right now. He lives in the crime space, which is a space you and I both love. But he is one of the best, most talented people writing comics, and he has been for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I think people might forget that because he's one of those guys that has no interest in coming back to Marvel and DC and likes what he's doing, makes a living doing it, works in TV and film, and will stay writing Criminal and the related series forever if he's allowed to, which is totally fine with me because I love it. But he is one of the best people in comics, most talented people in comics, for sure.
This was I'm telling you that, you know, 1999 to 2004, 2005, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
That was really that was the sort of the birth of our website and when we did it, when we fell in love with comics in a different way. And we were learning about them. But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's so many great things that came out during that time that are kind of not equal because it all felt so fresh. But that might have to do with our age.
I'm sure there's some of that, but there was also that post-Marvel bankruptcy.
Yeah.
It was pre-movie, so there was the spotlight still wasn't there. They were still underground in terms of mainstream attention.
And there was also this, like, they have nothing to lose, so, you know, what do you got? And all these guys who had been raised, you know, on... I will never forget, like, hearing Ed Brubaker talk about, you know, going to the comic shop every, you know, waiting for each new Watchmen. These were the guys born... of that, you know, they were just the right age when all that stuff in 86 happened, all that Frank Miller stuff. And they just, you know, they got their hands on the reins, you know, as the first generation raised on those comics. And they was, let's show you something. It wasn't just about being dark and gritty for the sake of doing it. Like it happened in the 90s, you know,
mm-hmm.
It was like, no, we're going to do that. We're going to tell you real, we're going to do real stories with real characterization. But we also love the stuff that this stuff's built on.
There's real substance here. There's real substance.
Yeah.
I'm scrolling through it as we talk. And it's just, there's a lot of great sequences and pages here. I really love in this particular volume that you get the concept sketch that was for the cover and then the actual cover. It's fun to see how that changed between the sketch and the finished product.
Yeah.
So this is a fun collection. If you happen to want one, this is a good one to have because you do get point blank and you do get a lot of back matter. But man, this is a great superhero story. It's a great noir story. It's a private eye story, even though it's not. It's a spy story.
Those cover images really stick with me. Like, oh, right. I'm. Those all feel familiar, and iconic's not really the word, but they jog a real memory for me.
No, the covers are. I mean, for whatever reason, they stick in your head.
Yeah.
Because when I didn't necessarily remember the actual stories, I did remember the covers.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I wasn't reading it in single issues, but still.
Yeah, it surprised me.
Well, so I would say check out Sleeper. It's one of the best books from that era. It won't disappoint you, I don't think, if you like that kind of thing. If you're a Brubaker fan, if you're a Brubaker Phillips fan, you have to read it. It's a must read.
It is still a superhero story. I mean, yeah.
It's safely in that realm.
Superpowers and supervillains and good stuff.
It's The Departed with superpowers.
Yep.
So let's do ratings on it. Ratings on Sleeper Book 1. Out of 5 stars, I'm going to give this a volume of 4.5.
I'm going to go with 4.75.
Well, that's fair.
I mean, that answers your earlier question, I think.
Yeah. It's a great volume, though.
Mm-hmm.
Do not sleep on Sleeper.
Hey, now.
That is our discussion about Sleeper Book 1. We have one more Booksplode this year in November. So we'll be coming back to that. Until then, you can listen to the Talksplode, which is the sister show to this one. We alternate months. The Talksplode is Josh's interview show. Last month, he talked to Brad Meltzer. Next month, he'll be talking to someone. Don't know who it is, but it'll happen. Do. Josh knows.
I mean, provided they don't bail on me again, because that happens.
But so you can look for those. You can also listen to the Pick a Week show, which is our weekly podcast. We talk about the week's comics and also our special edition shows that come out every so often. All those shows are ifanboy.com. Please check them out. And until November, when the next Booksplode happens, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thank you.